Welcome back to Forum. I'm Judy Campbell in today for Dave Iverson. Since March, at least 278 people nationwide have fallen sick from a strain of Salmonella Heidelberg, linked to three Foster Farms processing plants in Central California. The Centers for Disease Control has reported that some of the strains are showing antibiotic resistance, which may explain why hospitalization rates in this case are nearly double a typical outbreak. The USDA has not issued a recall. It has threatened to close the three plants. But yesterday, they said that Foster Farms met a deadline for plans to improve conditions. In this half hour, we'll talk about Foster Farms, Salmonella, and how well the food safety system is working with Michael Hansen, who's a senior scientist with Consumers Union, nonprofit publisher of Consumer Reports. He's worked on food safety issues for 25 years. Welcome, Michael Hansen.
Glad to be with you.
We're also joined by Maurice Pateski, veterinarian with a faculty appointment in poultry health and food safety epidemiology at UC Davis. Thanks for joining us, Maurice Pateski.
Thank you for having me.
Michael Hansen, start us out. I'd like to get your reaction to the USDA allowing the three Foster Farms plants to stay open.
We actually think this is outrageous. This plant has these three plants have much higher rates of Salmonella, and they have found these outbreak strains of Salmonella Heidelberg that are multiply antibiotic resistant. So they're pathogens. They're on that meat. That meat should not be allowed to go into the human food supply. And I would point out that Consumers Union has been testing chicken every 2 years for the last 5 or 10 years, and one of the samples that we were testing turned up positive for Salmonella Heidelberg, and it's one of the outbreak strains that is involved in this outbreak. And it was, we bought it in California in July, and it came from one of the same plants. So our position is, just like the consumer groups had submitted a petition to the USDA 2 years ago that said any pathogenic, any form of Salmonella which causes human illness and is resistant to antibiotics should be declared an adulterant. And the one we found was resistant to five antibiotics from three classes.
Well, first explain the Salmonella Heidelberg. Now, this is a different strain than we've seen in the past?
Well, no, it's one of the outbreak strains. There are many, quote, strains of Salmonella that exist in animals. Many of them don't cause any problems or illnesses with humans, but Salmonella Heidelberg does. It's a pathogenic strain, and this one is particularly virulent. The hospitalization rate with this one is 43%. That's about twice the level that is normally seen with a Salmonella. So this one's particularly virulent, and it's multiply resistant to antibiotics. So this is sort of like a newer form of Salmonella. Most of the strains don't cause human illness.
So you think these plants should be shut down and that there should be a recall on this chicken?
Yes. They should have been recalled, and the plants should be shut down until they can complete the process to clean themselves up. And I would point out that there was an outbreak of Salmonella Heidelberg that sickened 134 people last year in the Pacific Northwest, linked to Foster Farms, and they cleaned up their facility up there so that it got to the Salmonella. They got it down to 1.5%, and yet they did nothing with their plants in California. And these three, they're up at 25% Salmonella contamination. And I should point out, when we did our chicken testing back in 2010, Tyson was at 7%, Purdue was at 6%, and Foster Farms was at 29% Salmonella. So we wonder, since they cleaned up the plant in Washington, why they didn't do the same thing in California and why they had to wait until there was an outbreak here.
Maurice Pateski, you have toured Foster Farms plants. Have you toured these Foster Farm plants, and what do you think of them?
I've been to one of the facilities, and I just want to point out just a couple things, first of all. Just because a bacteria is resistant to an antibiotic doesn't make it a superbug, doesn't make it particularly virulent with respect to morbidity, mortality, sickness, and death, as long as it can be treated by basically the point of care antibiotics. So basically, if you're looking at Salmonella Heidelberg, a physician would typically treat it with a fluoroquinolone. We're not seeing in any of these strains any resistance to fluoroquinolones, for example. So it's important when we think about antibiotic resistance, there is antibiotic resistance in nature, some of it's natural, and there also is antibiotic resistance in that some bacteria are a little more likely through evolutionary processes to transfer antibiotic resistance genes to other bacteria.
So in your view, it is not necessarily a sign that there is overuse of antibiotics or that antibiotics used in the facility in the farm animals are causing a problem.
Correct. I think if you look at, I can speak for California because I've been to a lot of poultry facilities in California. Antibiotic use in anecdotally, from my perspective, in poultry is not typically used, actually. It's one of these almost red herrings, and I think there's this assumption that they're just kind of used willy-nilly. For economic reasons, they're not used kind of in that same approach that they might have been used 20 or 30 years ago, and also for regulatory reasons. That fluoroquinolone that I just mentioned that is typically used for human infections of salmonella, you cannot use that in birds. You can't use that if you have a pet chicken or if you have a farm of 500,000 birds on them. The other thing I kind of want to point out is that, when you look at the decision on whether to keep the plants open or not, one could argue that the Foster's chicken right now is the most heavily surveilled chicken in the world right now. Because of an outbreak, obviously, and the FSIS and the USDA are increasing their sampling, positive samples. As an epidemiologist, you kind of have to correct for this, but you have positive samples. Whenever they get detected, you're going to have more and more people coming in there and doing more and more testing until they're able to resolve the actual outbreak itself. So you could make an argument that this is the most heavily surveilled and most heavily tested chicken that's going out into the marketplace in the United States at the minimum.
And what about the chicken that has been, the stuff that was processed in the plant that has been linked to this salmonella, is that okay that has not been recalled by Foster Farms? Is that sitting on the shelves now in many places?
Yeah, so it's an interesting question. So as the other speaker mentioned, there are about 2,500 different serotypes of salmonella. The normal ecology of birds have salmonella in them. There are a handful of serotypes, probably about 20 of them or so, that cause some level of disease and potential pathogenicity. Some of those, the hospitalization rates were twice what we would normally expect in an outbreak. As an epidemiologist, I kind of want to drill down to that data more. I really want to understand which people are being sickened, and we need to make sure that we're comparing apples to apples. So as an epidemiologist, I really want to understand what people are sickened and can we really compare that to previous outbreaks. The other thing we really need to understand is that, I've heard quotes of people saying this is not your grandmother's salmonella anymore. We don't know that. We don't know if this strain is more virulent or less virulent than other previous strains of Salmonella Heidelberg. The only way we can really understand that is by doing some advanced molecular testing and further analyses. So what I'm saying is that the molecular biology of the Heidelberg hasn't really been understood, and until we really understand it, it's very difficult to make a recall decision based upon what might be a run-of-the-mill Salmonella Heidelberg outbreak. We just don't know that.
And talk a little more about Salmonella. I mean, this is different than something like E. coli. As you said, there is, I think it's 7, there is a 7.5% there of chicken is allowed to be found with Salmonella and still allowed to be sold, correct? So. Yeah, go ahead. Explain salmonella.
And this is where it gets a little, I wouldn't say complicated, but just it's just the nature of birds. So when we process chickens or when companies process chickens, they keep the skin on the bird. We don't do that with beef. We don't do that with swine, for example. So the rates of salmonella, E. coli, probably campylobacter in raw poultry are higher, significantly higher, in part because of the nature of keeping the skin on the bird. So if you go onto these plants, and I've been on them, and Foster's, I can speak to one of their facilities that I've been on. As a food safety and poultry health epidemiologist, I walk onto those facilities just from a scientific perspective, and I see them doing everything they're supposed to do. Okay, so at the farm level, they're employing good biosecurity in order to prevent rodents and wildlife from getting onto those facilities. They use vaccines in order to control for salmonella, et cetera, et cetera. On the processing side, They use all different types of cleaning approaches in order to prevent basically any type of contamination. Now, the nature of birds are going to basically create a higher level of contamination than the nature of other animal samples or other food animals.
So, Michael Hansen, sorry?
I just have to say something. I don't know what plant he went to, but he has obviously not been at the plants that are implicated in this outbreak. I would suggest that he read the letter that USDA sent to Foster Farms, the Notice of Intended Enforcement. And if you look at the letter, for example, the plant that the sample of chicken we bought came from, plant 6137A, if you look at this letter, the plant was filthy, in a sense. They said specifically from January 1st, 2013 through September 27th, FSIS personnel have documented 12 non-compliance records for findings of fecal material on carcasses. 12 different times they had feces on the carcasses. They were told about them and over and over and over. That is not clean production. You do not want feces on the birds. Oh, and it said, furthermore, FSIS has identified multiple non-compliances, including but not limited to findings of poor sanitary dressing practices, insanitary food contact surfaces, insanitary non-food contact surfaces, and direct product contamination as evidenced by the documentation of a considerable number of recurring non-compliance records issued to your establishment for pre-operational, operational, and SPS non-compliances.
Right. Let's have Maurice Petesky. Can you respond to that? It was a harsh letter from the USDA, which has said a different thing more recently. Go ahead.
It is, and you know, the other thing they mentioned that the other speaker didn't mention is that these conditions at Foster's are not uncommon relative to other facilities. So this is the nature.
That's not true.
This is the nature of processing. You know, the thing that I would ask is when we look at these unsanitary conditions or when we look at fecal material on birds, where in the process did they find that fecal material? Because obviously a bird that is just being euthanized is going to have fecal material on its feathers. Again, the nature of birds.
Those are on the carcasses as they're going through the plant. There's a zero tolerance policy, and they're written up when the birds, after they've been slaughtered and are on the production line.
And again, the nature of the process is that you have skin on these birds, and there could be fecal material on those birds. And, you know, all I can speak for is the time that I've been out to the Foster's facility. They have their own staff veterinarians. They practice what we call hazard analysis, critical control points. They leverage the university system, both in California and nationally. I mean, I think to me, when the report came out, I was a little surprised in that, for the most part, Foster's is actually a very good example of a large company with respect to food safety. And I think if you look in the entire poultry and food safety industry, most people would agree with that.
Oh, but then why is their salmonella rate so higher? The national average or the standard is 7.5%. When we sampled, we found Tyson's and Purdue could meet that, 7%, 6%. Foster Farms was at 29% in our national sample in 2010, and in these three plants, it's 25% for all three of them. That is not, that is significantly higher than the 7.5% that others can do. So this is not clean for the industry, and
okay.
It is
Maurice,
not routine for establishments to have over an 8-month period 12 times where they have been written up for fecal contamination.
Let's get a quick response to you from that, Maurice Petesky. And actually, first, let me invite our listeners to join us. We'd like to hear your thoughts on how well the food safety system is working. When you hear words, you know, fecal matter on birds, what does this do to your eating habits? Have stories like this changed your purchasing habits, what you eat? If you'd like to join the discussion, give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. If you could, Maurice Petesky, if you could respond to this charge that Michael Hansen makes that the salmonella rates are higher at Foster Farms, which has had a good reputation, than other places.
Right. So first of all, I can't comment on a private study and how, you know, that was done and statistically what type of analyses were done and all that kind of things. But I know the FSIS, when they do their sampling, and they'll sample the bird, basically the effluent from the bird when they're washing it before it's packaged, And they'll do sampling of that material in order to find all types of potentially pathogenic bacteria. My understanding of the data is that there actually Foster's has been actually a benchmark of what the FSIS has been using in order to figure out what the threshold, that 7.5% number, should be. So actually, their numbers have gotten down to 5%, I think below 5% in over the last year or two, which kind of brings up an interesting point. The question is, if Foster's is doing, according to FSIS, is doing everything they're supposed to be doing, and if Foster's, if the prevalence of Salmonella Heidelberg and other pathogenic bacteria is below what FSIS is expecting and is continuing to decrease over a 10 or 15-year period, the question is, why do we have this outbreak? Why did Salmonella Heidelberg sicken people? And there's all kinds of interesting answers as to why that is. Are we creating some kind of microbial niche for a bacteria that was previously outcompeted by other harmless bacteria by the cleaning practices that we've basically developed?
Well, and what do we do about that, Maurice Potaski? At this point, I mean, you do not think that there should be more regulation. Is that right? That isn't the answer for you?
Not necessarily so. I think, you know, if you look in the egg industry, we have a few years ago, there was a 500 million eggs that were recalled for a Salmonella enteritidis outbreak from a couple facilities in Iowa. I think that affected 17 or 18 states also. And the FDA, in response to outbreaks like that, started testing for Salmonella enteritidis. And I think, for the most part, that's actually been very successful. So the idea is, though, that we need to understand better what's actually going on here with Heidelberg. I think until we really understand the biology of it, are we dealing with a super strain? Are we dealing with something that's worse than 5 or 10 or 15 years ago of Salmonella Heidelberg? You know, until we really understand those type of questions, I think we need to really, as an epidemiologist, I think we really need to look at that data and then come to some conclusions about and recommendations.
And what should consumers be doing about this? How much should we be worried about Salmonella? And is there a consumer role in this? I know the industry, by the way, we did invite Foster Farms, but they declined to join us. And one thing that they have said is that consumers need to do that Salmonella, as long as you cook your chicken enough, you're not going to get Salmonella, and it's about safe handling practices.
I think it's multi-pronged. So I think that there is a responsibility for the government to do adequate surveillance, and regulations are part of that, obviously, and having inspectors that are in the processing facilities is essential. I think the company has a, you know, ethical or moral responsibility, however you want to look at it, to produce the safest product possible. And, you know, when you think about how to prevent Salmonella, you don't just do that in the processing facility, you do that on the farm. And those are essential kind of components of preventing and reducing and mitigating, maybe not eliminating, pathogenic bacteria. But there is also a consumer responsibility. And, you know, it is our job as consumers to be aware that any raw product, whether it's vegetables, whether it's meat, can have risks associated with it. And we need to be very careful, especially when we deal with raw poultry. Poultry is a slightly trickier and potentially riskier material when it's raw. When it's cooked, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it, just like other meats.
And as a consumer note, one thing we're seeing in the reporting here is that people have been mishandling poultry by washing it, and that you shouldn't be washing poultry in a sink because it spreads the bacteria?
Exactly. So, I think that's kind of a common misconception, is that we don't want to wash any raw poultry before cooking it. Because the washing, at least the theory goes, and I think there's been some published material on this, that when you wash that, you can basically spread the bacteria. They can basically move up to 3 feet from the actual area that you're washing them in. The other thing to be real careful with is the kind of cutting surfaces that you're using. You know, we always talk about using plastic cutting boards for poultry because they're really easy. They're much easier to clean. They're not porous, so you don't have the risk of bacterium getting into a pore of like a wood cutting board, for example. The only thing I would tell consumers is just make sure your cutting boards don't have lots of ridges in them from all the knife cuts that you're doing on them.
All right. Maurice Potaski is a veterinarian with a faculty appointment in poultry health and food safety epidemiology at UC Davis, also joined by Michael Hansen, senior scientist at Consumers Union. And we'd like to hear from you. John, please join us from Oakland. Hi, John.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen. I have to remind myself that we're not talking about climate change. When I hear the same reasoning that climate change deniers would use in this argument, which is we don't know enough, we need to go back to the data. in light of recent events and some really seriously ill people, I think reflecting on Europe's precautionary principle is probably a better way to approach that. But this is my comment. My question actually goes to the heart of new FDA regulations, which have allowed increased processing times, speeding up the assembly lines, in addition to allowing more self-supervision, particularly of poultry plants. And I'm wondering if your guests think that that's going to help, you know, alleviate these kind of issues or make them worse. Thank you.
Michael Hansen.
Yes, we've actually commented on this. We think that will make the situation worse because they are proposing to speed up the line speeds for poultry and reduce the number of inspectors that are on the lines and replace them by company workers so that the federal inspectors would only be overseeing that. And this could be a problem because there is actually some evidence that the plants that are already doing this actually had a higher rate of salmonella last year than regular plants that were moving to this faster system with reduced inspection. That will only increase the problem. And I would just like to reiterate, we do not think that disease-causing pathogenic organisms should be allowed in food. It should not be up to the consumers to clean it up. The consumers should be given clean animals. And I would just point out, in Sweden, if you do the right thing, they have 0% salmonella. It can be achieved, but you have to be do it right, and it's not done that way here.
Michael Hansen, does the USDA have the authority it needs, in your opinion, to be able to act on these, or is it just not exercising authority you think it should?
It's not exercising the authority. They could, if they wanted to, declare this, well, they could declare the pathogenic form of this as an adulterant, since it has been linked to outbreaks of a disease. They could, if they said that this particular salmonella was an adulterant, then what that would mean legally is that it could not be sold. Does not mean a recall would happen, but it could not be sold. And the reason we think a recall needs to be done is because this outbreak started in late February, early March. People have been buying this product from these facilities, and the outbreak is still ongoing. So even if they've cleaned stuff up as of last Friday, what about people that have bought and have material from when the plant was filthy, when it was in these insanitary conditions?
Well, that's Jessica in Oakland, apparently, who emailed. It may be one of those people. I just bought a six-pack of chicken wings with a suspect lot number. Should I take it back or just relax and eat it? A quick answer from both of you. Michael Hansen?
We're recommending people do not eat
it. Get rid of it.
And they discard it.
How about you, Maurice Petesky?
I think if you cook the chicken properly, there is absolutely no risk at all. But if people feel uncomfortable, then they should, it's in their right, and they should return it.
Vanessa writes, a few years ago, we passed Prop 2 in California. We were promised better treatment of animals with the goal of improving our food supply. Seems that there are systemic issues that still need to be addressed if such large-scale farming operation is foregoing the safety of the food for the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to the Animals label. No label stamp has credibility anymore. Another example of too big to fail. I guess salmonella does not come under the Foster Farms marketing tagline of all natural. Mark in Pleasanton joins us, please. Hi, Mark.
So, thank you very much for taking my call. Really appreciate that. Let me switch to speaker to hear you better. So my question or comment is the following. I wonder if there could be a bit of discussion in terms of a broader, more international context of U.S. food safety. Undoubtedly, food safety is extremely important, and I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't be very vigilant about it. But as a physician, it occurs to me that we have extremely good public health and food safety infrastructure in the United States. Nothing is perfect, obviously. Sweden, for example, is a much, much smaller country. A great many countries in the world, as China, which granted is no benchmark, turn to the United States and buy food from abroad because they simply don't have the sort of public health infrastructure in their own country. And I wonder if you guys could comment on that, and I'll take that answer off the air. Thank you.
Maurice Petesky.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that last part. What he wants me to comment basically on the infrastructure that we have?
Yeah, and I think that the broader question was comparisons with other countries.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the United States we have the FDA, we've got the USDA, we've got the CDC. Those are kind of benchmarks for the rest of the world for the most part. So we, especially when it comes to tracing diseases and trying to prevent diseases now with the new Food Safety Modernization Act, we're actually very fortunate. You know, one thing I'd point out, when you look at, and this is where things get complicated, but in 2001, the country of Denmark banned growth promotants in food animals. When Denmark banned those antibiotics for growth promotion in pork and poultry, animal deaths and disease actually rose, requiring more therapeutic antibiotics to treat those diseases. So we have to really think about what we want with our food animals. We want, obviously, healthy, nutritious products that are safe and nutritious for us, but we also have a contract with the animals and that we have to protect the welfare of the animals. And using antibiotics appropriately is an essential component of that, whether you're a farm of 500,000 birds or whether you're a farm of 10 birds. I mean, that's just an essential component. And that's, you know, I think something that we have to consider is that there is a contract not only between us, the government, and the company, but also with the animal, and to treat the animal with respect and to treat the animal as a veterinarian, to treat the animal if it gets sick.
Hey, Michael Hansen, why don't you tell, from your perspective, lessons learned from other countries and also respond to other countries.
I agree we do it better than China, but compared to Europe, for example, Europe, they do not allow drugs to be given to animals for non-therapeutic purposes. It is not only against the law, it's against the code of ethics for veterinarians. We have no problem giving subtherapeutic doses of antibiotics to our livestock. I would point out, it isn't just that Sweden is a small country that they can have clean chicken. The chicken that, when it comes out of the plants, there's a zero tolerance for it. So that could be scaled up. I do think that we do have some good laws. They're not in force. The Food Safety Modernization Act, our organization fought for that to happen, but it's not really being implemented because they're not passing the money for it. There's been delays on the implementing regs being put out. In fact, consumer groups had to sue the agency to come out with some of these regulations. So we need to modernize our food safety systems, and we're doing it very slowly.
All right. We have been talking about the Foster Farms chicken that's been linked to a salmonella outbreak with Michael K. Hansen, senior scientist with Consumers Union, and Maurice Pateski, veterinarian at UC Davis with faculty appointment at UC Davis. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for being part of our program. I'm Judy Campbell here today for Dave Iverson. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.